Hello, this is Tim Calvert, occasional host on KBOO, and with me today is Zahra Alkaby. Zahra, you want to say hello?
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, everybody.
This morning, we are going to be talking about the war in Iraq and the state of the Iraqi refugees and an event people can become involved in to lend their hand to the disaster that has been going on. I'm just going to plug that event right now, and then we're going to do a short introduction, and then I'll be interviewing Zahra in just a few moments. So the event that's coming up that I'm hoping as many people can participate in as possible is this Saturday, March 27th. We are gathering at the East Bank Esplanade between 11 and 2 p.m. Down at the foot of Southeast Salmon by the statue of Vera Katz. And we'll be gathering there, holding some signs, getting people's bikes ready for a bike ride, which will then go from the East Bank Esplanade down south to Selwood. And we'll ride at 2 p.m., 2 to 3 p.m. We'll be riding south on the Springwater Corridor to the Selwood Community Center, which is at 1436 Southeast Spokane. And at the Selwood Community Center, we'll be showing a movie, Female Faces of War, from 3 to 4, and then from 4 to 4:30, Zahra will be speaking again about the situation in Iraq and asking for donations to save refugees. And then we'll be having a potluck, where a great American tradition, a potluck where the community, everyone who can, brings food, and of course everyone's welcome. And we'll have the opportunity to break bread with the Iraqi refugees who are here in Portland from 4:30 to 6. So if no one has had Iraqi food, I urge people to come and check it out because it's really delicious. 7 years of criminal violence directed at the civilians of Iraq have now passed. The wars across the Middle East have continued and intensified. The civilian American rage against these wars has actually diminished despite the rising disaster that this foreign policy, that the U.S. government, with its selected allies and masters, pursue. How large is the disaster for civilians of the U.S. and Iraq because of this disastrous foreign policy? In Iraq, since the first American assault in 1993, when the U.S. defeated but did not remove Saddam Hussein from power, there was a crippling level of sanctions which most directly affected the civilians of Iraq. Then Bush Jr. and his neocon criminal gang were selected in the 2000 elections. Public documents, once upon a time discussed, now forgotten, detailed illegal geopolitical goals that would expand the wars in the Middle East. This was called a clean break, a new strategy for securing the realm, and another one, these were think tank documents. Another was the Project for a New American Century, which was a neocon document that focused on attacking Iraq before even 9/11/2001. The criminal actions on 9/11/2001 have never been properly investigated. The net effect was to give an excuse to the U.S. military elite to open up an endless war in the Middle East, starting with Afghanistan and then Iraq and perhaps now Iran, Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia. Iraqis have been exposed to a genocidal level of violence and ethnic cleansing. I was just speaking with Zahra of a population of about 20 million in the whole country of Iraq. About 4.5 million are displaced persons, so almost 25% of the population now in Iraq is displaced either within the country or has fled the country. A complete disaster. And I just want to remember something that's happened, because in this country, forgetting what happened even just a few years ago is very commonplace. In Fallujah, remember that name, in Fallujah, April of 2004, the Bush criminal gang used the excuse of killed Blackwater employees to begin a campaign of total destruction of the city of Fallujah, known as the City of Mosques. a place that had been peaceful, a city on the edge of the desert, a city and a population that had done nothing to deserve the attack they received. Guernica, Dresden, Hiroshima, now Fallujah. All of these cities were targeted with experimental weapons designed to kill the civilian population. In Fallujah, Marines were told that because they had warned the civilians, that meant the whole city was a free fire zone, which meant that to the American and British soldiers that they could kill anyone they saw. This was a war crime. Their first targets on the city were the hospitals. This is a war crime. In addition to shooting civilians, the town itself was bombed with white phosphorus, an experimental weapon, causing horrific injuries, fires, and unknown long-term damage. This was a war crime, later copied by the Israelis in Gaza. Finally, the invading killers used depleted uranium ammunition, which radioactively poisons both the soldiers using the uranium bullets, but of course the victims. Now a British team, as reported by the BBC, has visited Fallujah. Birth defects are rampant, and the women of Fallujah have been told not to have children. Thus, the city of mosques has been laid barren and its people sterilized. The American and British soldiers who participated in this bloodbath are now traumatized and ruined as they reflect on their destroyed humanity, as they followed the illegal orders to attack the people of Fallujah and the city of mosques. The people of Fallujah, Baghdad, Mosul, Ramadi, Samarra, Basra, Mosul have all been forced to flee or face an uncertain future. Those who could left, those who were trapped stayed. The U.S. occupation has destroyed the economy, ruined the infrastructure, heightened ethnic tensions deliberately, harmed in incalculable ways the psychological and physical health of the Iraqi people. 1.5 million Iraqis are displaced inside Iraq. These people have no international standing and are at the mercy of American occupation forces and an ineffective Iraqi government that does not even acknowledge their existence. The International Rescue Committee has compiled some statistics of the Nakba, Arabic for disaster, of the refugee problem. 77% are displaced because their homes are unusable or destroyed. 36% had to sell their homes under duress. 26% have fled religious or ethnic tensions. 20% fled due to insecurity and restricted movement. 16% fled because their homes are in areas occupied by insurgents or militias. 3 million refugees live in Syria and Jordan. 40,000 who have been processed by the UN and are slated to be brought to the United States. The Iraqi refugees largely have no income and no support from any agency. The U.S. has spent $650 billion in military operations, $29 billion for diplomatic operations, but virtually nothing for the humanitarian disaster they have created for innocent civilians. 200 Iraqi families are in Portland now. However, that is small compared to Salt Lake City, Houston, and Atlanta. In the midst of this disaster, one shining bright spot has emerged for me and the people of Portland. In 2007, an Iraqi, Zahara Alkaby, arrived in Portland with her two teenage daughters. She is an activist and is unusual for a number of reasons. One, she saw the struggle for Iraqi refugees as including all the people from Iraq and has tirelessly worked for unity and understanding between the differing Iraqi groups that have come to live in Portland. She has not been intimidated by the numerous hardships that she has had to personally overcome and the political challenges faced by such a fractured community. She has remained true to her faith. She has fought for her rights, the rights of her children, and the rights of all Iraqis to live in dignity, both here in the States and back in the Middle East. She speaks as an Iraqi, a mother, a Muslim, and as a refugee. She started life in Baghdad, one of 12 children. Her father was murdered by Saddam Hussein for refusing to join the Ba'ath Party. Her brother was arrested by Saddam and held in Abu Ghraib prison. Despite these setbacks, she did well in school, and Iraqi custom is to reward relatives who are doing well in school. With the presents she received, Zahra was able to get a bicycle tie-in here. And despite her mother's objections, she and her friends rode their bikes through the streets of Baghdad. In young adulthood, Zahra found her future blocked by both the American sanctions and the Ba'ath Party vindictiveness. She left with her family to Amman, Jordan in 2003. She was invited to go to school in Brattleboro, Vermont to study conflict resolution. She did so and then had the opportunity to stay in the U.S. under refugee status. I met Zahra when she spoke at a gathering at the Peace House back in 2007. I was instantly struck by her intelligence and charisma. We became friends, and I worked with her on various solidarity projects. Some of the more satisfying aspects of working with Zahra has been her teaching me about Iraqi food, drink, and customs. Zahra is the first Muslim Arab I've really got to know, and I can say that the civilization and the humanity of the Iraqi people shines through Zahra. I have become familiar with how the Iraqis like to drink their tea and coffee, think cardamom. The Iraqi people have become very sad and traumatized by everything that has happened to them. The injustice and the indifference of the international community to their plight puts them, unfortunately, in the same deadly place as the Palestinians. The lesson I have learned is that one that most cross-border activists learn early on. People are people everywhere. Their humanity is what unites us. The culture of Iraq is to be respected and honored. The people of Iraq are special and wonderful. I want nothing more to be than to be friends with them, hold them in respect, and honor their wishes. Iraq is home to the earliest human civilizations, law, writing, government, agriculture, waterworks, all of these things Iraq gave to the world. Surely we can do better than destroying their country and driving their people out. Zahra, welcome back to KABU.
Thank you, Tim, for the nice introduction, and thank you for inviting me to speak today at KABU. And I was talking to many people in Portland about the event. I was trying to send some emails and make phone calls. I've been really busy for 2 weeks, and I hope that we will see some massive, you know, people there and crowd, that we will get the message out for people. Because it's really saddened me when I see that the news or the media, the TV news, and everybody is really forgot about Iraq, and no one really talks about it right now. And the disaster is still there. I mean, nothing changed in Iraq, and people are still struggling there. Children are still dying. There is no, like, basic, you know, factors of life, of normal life in Iraq still. And so I really don't know why people neglect or try to turn heads from the Iraqi issue while the disaster is still going on there.
Amen. Zahra, can you talk, you know, let's just flesh out the situation a little bit here, and we've got some questions just to run through a little bit about what's happening in Iraq. Can you talk about the current political, you know, in the American media, we hear a lot about the elections and, you know, what it's Maliki and
Alawi
mm-hmm. and, you know, oh, this and that, and we don't hear anything else. Do these elections mean anything to the Iraqi people and the Iraqi refugees?
In fact, the Iraqi streets now very busy with the whole election thing, and that's true that people are trying to vote and choose the current government because people inside Iraq are so tired. And they just can't stand another, like, corrupted government. And really, they work hard to find the right person to rule Iraqis. At the same time, Iraqi refugees are not in the same position. And they are not really, they are not hoping that the situation will get any better for them. If we talk about the Iraqi refugees in the Middle East, we can mention about Syria and Jordan, because in Jordan we have almost like 1 million Iraqi refugees living among the capital. And also we have, I think, 200,000 Iraqi refugees in Syria. So if you like compare these two countries with the other countries in the Middle East, you will really find that Iraqis resettled in Jordan and Syria. And so they are really thinking if the situation gets any better in Iraq, it will be easier for them to go back to their country than to stay in these countries. The situation of Iraqis in Jordan or Syria is so difficult, and I met so many people, especially people who just came to Portland, and they said that it's very difficult for all the families, you know, to stay for 5 years, 7 years, 6 years, 4 years in these countries with no rights, children can go to school, you can find a job, and you are not legal in the country. So it's very tough situation for Iraqis, and it's very irritated. Sometimes some people get really desperate and depressed, so they decide to go back to Iraq, even though they know that they might put their life and their family's life at risk, but they prefer to do so because they are unable to do anything in these countries. So the Iraqi refugees, they do hope that the situation will get better soon in Iraq and they can go back to their homes and their jobs and their normal life. I hope that the situation will get better after the election and the new government changes. But the Iraqi people inside Iraq, they look different to the picture. And they really want to have someone who relate to them. Like some of the people who voted for al-Maliki, for example. They want to have him and his party because they want, like the majority people in Iraq, they are the Shia. And so they want someone who belongs to this group to rule Iraqis. The same thing with the Sunni people. They really vote and they're so much motivated to vote for someone who belongs to the Sunni sect because they do want to see someone who, you know, belongs to their sect to be one of the leaders in Iraq. The same situation with the minorities. You know, if you are a Christian, then you vote for a Christian guy. If you are a Kurd, then you vote for a Kurd political party.
Has this kind of ethnic division been in Iraq forever, or is this kind of a result of the occupation and the disruption that's occurred?
I mean, the situation gets really bad after 2003. Before that, Iraqis were living in Iraq for millions of years. And they were always, you know, they've been always there and they are always different, right? But the situation after 2003 became really scary. And people became intimidated and they are trying to stay connected to their sects because they believe that if you go and you sit in that place or you be around these, you know, people who are different from your sect, then you will be targeted. And I don't know whether the Americans were trying to create that in Iraq. I don't know whether another country is trying to increase the division between Iraqi people. I don't know really why this, you know, became obvious and scary this way. And I'm hoping that the Iraqi people will come over it and be unified again because this is the country for all Iraqis. And it has been always.
What would you like to say to the American soldiers that are currently serving in Iraq? And how do you want them to behave?
I mean, the American soldiers in Iraq, what are you doing there? I want to say to them. What are you doing there for 7 years? I remember when the mission was accomplished in 2003 and George W. Bush visited the American troops in a base in Baghdad. They raised the American flags and with the mission accomplished sign. So if it was accomplished since 2003, then what are you doing within these 7 years? And then if you are there, what are you trying to do with Iraqi people? Do you really respect these people? Do you really know something about the Iraqi culture and civilization? Do you know that you are destroying one of the oldest civilizations in the whole world? Do you really know that?
Speaking as a political activist from the Middle East, can you talk about your perspective about what is going on in Egypt and Palestine, Lebanon, Syria, Iran, you know, with the intervention of the Americans and the British and the Israelis? Can you just kind of summarize some of the trends going on in the region and what do the people feel?
I mean, lately I've been watching the news and I do have my own channels, Arabic channels. So I've been watching the news from different, you know, Arabic channels and everybody is so upset and so mad because of the situation and in Iraq, what is going on in Gaza right now and how do the Israeli trying to attack from time to time Lebanon, the southern part of Lebanon, and maybe Syria one day. And everybody is so upset, and people are so tired to be silent. And most of the students at universities and colleges, they are so mad right now, and they are trying to organize massive demonstrations of students. So I think 2 weeks ago there was a big and massive demonstration in Cairo, and most of the people who are demonstrating there, they are the students from Cairo University. And they were trying to push the Egyptian government to do something regarding the situation in Gaza right now. And the same situation with Lebanon, the same situation with Syria. People are so mad. They're trying to go to the streets, trying to give a clear picture for the foreign intrusion in the Arab countries, that the Arab people are so mad and they really can't handle it anymore. And they want to really do something with the government, with their government, the Arab government, in order for them to do something to stop all these, you know, foreign intrusions.
Why is the event on Saturday, March 27th, important? How can people in Portland express their solidarity with the Iraqi people?
As far as I know, really, there isn't any group or some organizations that is really interested to do something for Iraq or talk about Iraq or gather people for the sake of Iraq. And as I mentioned in the beginning, I was trying to talk to some organizations and people and churches, and I'm trying to organize this event, and I really didn't get that response. Maybe I'm a little disappointed here, but I do believe that people in Portland, they are the people who work hard for serving humanity, and they are the people who are motivated to go outside in the street and say something and speak up for the situation in Iraq, for the situation in Gaza, in the Middle East. And I mean, the people in Portland, they've been always a good supporter for me and for other groups. And this is the time for Portlanders to come and be with us in the event and support the Iraqi issue and support also the Iraqi refugees who've been here in Portland. And they're really struggling to find jobs, to find, you know, houses, to find a supportive community. So this is the whole goal of the event, is to raise awareness about the situation inside Iraq, is to educate people about the Iraqi education, about the Iraqi, culture and civilization, and is to make connections between the Iraqi refugees here in Portland area and the people who live in Portland.
Excellent. Now, just to review a little bit on what's going to happen on the 27th, we'll be at the East Bank Esplanade by the Vera Katz statue, and we'll be having some signs and some Iraqi flags, and we'll be
Iraqi tea, coffee, tea cookies,
and, yes, and gathering people for the bike ride that's going to go down completely on the bike path. So for people who are even a little bit nervous about bike riding, this is going to be the bike ride for you, because we're not going to go on hardly any city streets at all. It's going to be all on a bike path, and it's going to be really chill. And I can say, as a person who goes up and down the Springwater Corridor, it's just fabulous right now. Spring is on us, and the trees are budding, and there's all sorts of wildlife down there. So it's going to be a fabulous ride after we gather. And then we'll be going to the Selwood Community Center on 1436 Southeast Spokane. It's basically on the corner of 15th and Spokane, straight up from the Springwater Corridor. A very easy little maneuver. And we'll be showing Faces of War. And Zahra, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Actually, there is a very good message in that documentary. And I would really encourage people to come and see the film, because there is a real genuine message in that film. And we didn't bring any actress. We didn't ask any, like, you know, people who are not there to say something about the situation. These are the untold stories from Iraq, and it's real stories from real people. I do encourage teenagers to come in and be with us to see the story of this teenage boy who decided to join the military and go to Iraq because he was thinking after that 1 year or so, he can come back here and get a free education and go to college and easily like that. But when you decide to put your life at risk, and when you decide to go to a war zone, do you really guarantee your life? This is what I want to say to the teenagers who really think about signing the military or sign and join the military. So I would really encourage parents and families, children, teenagers to come and be with us on that day. And I also know that everybody in Portland have a bike, so it will be really great to have as many people as we know. And I hope that the weather will be fine and sunny, and we will encourage everybody to go out and be with us in solidarity with the Iraqi people and the Iraqi refugees in Portland.
Zarek, can you describe maybe what dish you might bring to the potluck?
I mean, I myself, I'm going to make some Iraqi cookies, and some Iraqi families who just arrived to Portland, they will bring also Iraqi food. So one of them, they will bring biryani, which is rice with chicken or meat and some, you know, vegetables. And some families will bring dolma, and I think some people tried that at the Greek restaurants, but it's the Iraqi dolma.
Uh-huh. Excellent. So once again, an opportunity for sampling the culture that we've just invaded on a much more positive way, the way it should have been done from the beginning. And okay, Zara, it looks like we're done with the show. I want to say thank you for coming down to the studio today. And my name's Tim Calvert.